It's time to travel to the next room with Jane Asher, an exploration of the bigger picture surrounding life on Earth and what follows. Now, here's your host, Jane Asher, on Empower Radio.
It's always a pleasure when I get to come on the show and speak to individuals and kind of tackle different aspects of the next room. I've talked to so many different individuals from, you know, grief experts to life after death to near-death experience to mediums and psychics, and I'm always fascinated because I'm open to all types of individuals and their different ideas. And when this came through, this individual is a friend of mine, and he had a really cool angle on the next room. He's had a lot of things have happened, and he's gone through some loss, and all of us go through loss as we go through life. But the thing that, you know, kind of like hits you is, what is it about the legacy? What is it about honoring the principles of those that we love so dearly when they're here with us in the flesh form, and upholding those memories and paying homage to what they are all about? And so Nadir had sent me a podcast to listen to, and I was working out and I was listening to it, and I'm like, wow, this is really, really cool and very poignant. And for all of us going through so many changes as we age, and we lose parents and grandparents and siblings, and you know, it brings that to the forefront. What is it that we want to hang on to? What are those traditions, and not just papers and pictures, but other deeper things? So there you go. Nadir Omowali is my guest. He is a funk artist, a producer, a creative soul. He's a strategist. He's won the Detroit Music Awards for the last, 15 times or so. And just a really, really cool dude. And he's raising a couple kids, has a beautiful wife. And I just am so excited that he would come on the show and get personal with me. So thank you, Nadir. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Always a pleasure to speak with you. And it's going to be an interesting conversation, I'm sure.
It is. Now, so off mic, we were just having a little chat. And, you know, I was asking you about your music, because your music is so deep and very personal, and really, you're a master genius, but you're also producing. But you had a lot start in your life. So in 2012, you did what?
Well, in October of 2012, well, I guess I should start even earlier. So, throughout 2012, I was in the process of releasing an album called The Book of Jonah. And my name is Jonah Nadir Omowale. And so this book was, some of it was a kind of an ode to the apocalyptic ideas of 2012 and all of these things, but also just, you know, me getting some things off of my chest. And so we released a couple of singles in 2012. We released a music video, and in October of 2012, we released the full album. And that was all fantastic. And then we found out that we were going to have twins in May of 2013. And that kind of changed the entire trajectory of life. So things got a little bit different. And so I had spent the entire year kind of focusing on this next chapter, and getting ready to really put the pedal to the metal and move forward with my career and with my art. And then things kind of took a left turn.
Right. What happened? What was the left turn?
Well, I mean, the twins being born was
right.
A huge thing.
Right.
My wife and I are a little bit older, and so we've been trying for a long time, and so this was a blessing. It was absolutely a blessing, but that was a big deal, and that was a great thing. That was a really great thing.
Kind of taps the brakes on a career too, though.
Yeah, because then you gotta raise kids now. So it changes priorities, it changes the budgeting situation, it changes all of those things. So that was absolutely a big deal. But then we were really happy and kind of moving forward, just kind of figuring things out. But then the following year, in August of 2014, I lost my mother. Mm. And that was a surprise. She was 84 at the time. And mom was just amazing. She just was, she was one of those ladies that one of those people that just wants to help, you know what I mean? She wants to help other people. She's always just living her life in service to other people. Deeply Christian woman. She was the musician at church. She was the secretary of the church. She was, president of the Tennessee Missionary Baptist Women's Association for a long time, and held all types of different offices within the state for missionary Baptists, within the district and the region in East Tennessee, and all of these things. She was on the board at the Senior Citizen. She was on the board at the public library in my hometown, Elizabethton, Tennessee. She was alumni associations and all of these things. Just the consummate community activist. I mean, community, just always in service for other people, babysitting people's kids, all of these things. And so, you know, she really stressed that, really embodied that idea of just helping people. And she, you know, she'd had diabetes for a long time, but she was doing pretty well at managing it. And I think she was actually at the Bethel District Association, which is in East Tennessee. Missionary Baptist churches in East Tennessee have the district, and she was at their annual convention and just had chest pains and thought that she was having indigestion, and it just kind of didn't go away, and so she went to the hospital, and I think they misdiagnosed a heart attack.
Wow.
They sent her home, and thankfully my niece was there with her, because she collapsed on the bed. Told my niece, call 911, so they got her back to the hospital, but she passed at the hospital. So she had only been sick for a few days, and so it was a real surprise.
Right.
It was really, I mean, you're never prepared.
Right.
Obviously. I mean, no matter, whether your parent has been through a lengthy illness or whether it's out of the blue. This one was, I mean, we all felt like, mom was going to outlive all of us, she was really good job at maintaining. And, I think the last conversation I had with her on the phone, I was, fussing with her and telling her she needed to settle down and relax a little bit, take care of herself and all of these things. 'Cause I wasn't able to get there. By the time I was ready to get in the car and head down there, they're like, no, she's fine. We're going to send her home.
Wow.
All of these things from her staying in the hospital for a day or two. So it was you know, it was really a shock when she was, you know, when things happened the way that they turned. So
right. How did you, you know, I mean, everyone, grief is a bitch. How did you manage yours, or did you see it manifest in a certain way?
Well, it's, I guess I might, we might as well just get completely personal. It was really very different. My father passed in 1988, and I was 19 years old at the time. I was in college. He had been sick for a while, but he had diabetes, and he had a lot of complications with the diabetes. So ended up having both of his legs amputated. He was on kidney dialysis for years. He retired from the military in 1979, and essentially, you know, nine, 10 years later, he was gone.
Wow.
And, you know, it was a tough thing because, well, it was different. I mean, my father was a Vietnam veteran, and he, for my entire life, he was suffering from what I would term an undiagnosed case of PTSD.
Absolutely.
So he had nightmares. And he couldn't sleep at night. And so he would take a nap during the day, and he would have nightmares sleeping on the couch. And so every night that I remember, and every day that I remember, my father was yelling at someone, running, you know, trying to get away, or, you know, yelling no, and something was going on, you know, something was happening, and he was really dealing with that. And so he self-medicated with vodka and Jim Beam, as a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. And so that exacerbated the diabetes and the kidney problems, and probably the heart issues as well. So, and he had been kind of sick for a while, but it wasn't like we expected him to pass away. Wasn't really the thing, but I had a really different relationship with my father, and I, you know, because of the things that he was going through in his life, at the time when I was born, I don't know, we had a tough relationship. So I didn't cry when my father passed away.
Wow.
And I was sad. I was deeply sad, but I couldn't shed any tears. I was angry about things. I was really, you know, I was angry at other people. I wasn't happy with his funeral, you know, was a weird thing that, you know, that I felt like, he would have gotten up and walked out if he could have, cause he'd have been bored at his own funeral. But, you know, so that was different. And so I didn't cry for my father until 2007, 2006, 2007.
Oh my goodness.
And I went and had a, you know, I spoke with a shaman in Canada, actually, and she helped me to work through a lot of the issues that I was going through and some of that grief. And so, at that point I started celebrating my father's birthday. And on his birthday, I, even to this day, and I do the same for my mother, I'll cook some of their favorite foods and just kind of spend the day thinking about them. So on that first birthday of my father's that I celebrated, I just cried like a baby and made my peace with him. Mother was my rock. And so when she passed away, I fell apart. I had to keep it together, you know, because she would have wanted me to make sure I kept it. You know, I kept telling myself, you know, because when my father passed away, my mother was just the rock. She was everybody's rock.
Of
course. She felt like she had to be calm for everybody. So I didn't see my mother cry. when when he passed away. And she, you know, she cried a little bit, you know, here and there. I would see her wipe a tear, but she told me, you know, she felt like she had to be strong for us. And so when she passed away, I felt kind of that same pressure that I had to, you know, I had to hold it up. You know, I cried like a baby, but I at least had to hold it together. So dealing with the grief. Yeah. I mean, it was difficult, but again, there was all of this stuff that was taken care of. And one of the things that I think was really important, and I would highly recommend this to everyone, is that my mother paid for her own funeral. Wow. And paid for her own casket. Mm-hmm. And took care of all of the arrangements so that my brother and I wouldn't have to do it. That was, you know, that was just one of her thinking of everybody else before she thinks of herself. Yep. Very typical of my mother. And so, you know, that was one of those things all we had to do was, you know, make sure that the obituary was right and just kind of sign off on everything. And she really had done all of the work ahead of time. So that was something that I highly recommend to everyone is, you know, it really took a load off of us, from both a financial standpoint and also from, you know, from just that being able to, that gave us the freedom to deal with our grief a little bit more because we didn't have to, we didn't actually have to go through the bureaucracy and the paperwork.
Right.
So,
good for your mom. You know, that's a big deal. Like, especially now as I'm talking to so many different people, it's really forward thinking to take care of business and to get things,
right.
You know, and you know, your mom had her ducks in a row, so to speak. So,
The one thing that she didn't do, is she did not have a will. And I don't think she felt like she needed a will because she knew, you know, it's just me and my brother, and she knew that we would play fair. We're fine. We, you know, we get along fine. There wasn't going to be any arguing. We were going to divide everything fairly. She knew that we would do things fairly, but it still did complicate the process of probate just a little bit,
right.
Because she didn't have a will. It's still not bad, but it didn't, you know, it would have been easier if she had just written down, you know,
sure.
on a napkin, if she had written down y'all play fair and handed it to the, to the lawyer, then, you know, that would have been better than just having nothing, but everything was fine. And it was no real issues.
So let me ask you this. I mean, you know, I know that you've been through a lot and you've went through a lot of changes with your belief systems and, you know, how you, I don't know, just kind of like view the world and the mm-hmm. things that, you know, 'cause you were raised highly Christian and then you went through a big change when you were in your 30s. What do you now, are you able to hear your mom or your dad, or do you try to connect, or do you have conversations, or, you know, I don't know your belief system beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm one of those nutcases that walks around and talks to all kinds of dead people. 'Cause I think it's cool. You know, I like to have conversations with, if I need to fix something, I'm always talking to my Uncle Doug. If I need, mm-hmm. you know, some business advice, I'm talking to my dad. If I need cooking advice, I'm talking to my mom or my grandma. And for mm-hmm. me, that keeps their legacy and their memory alive. So what does Nadir Omowale do, or do you?
Well, I definitely feel their presence.
Okay.
There's no doubt about that. I feel my mother and my father here as we're having this conversation and as we're talking about their memory. I feel them here mm-hmm. now, making sure I say the right things. And, you know, so I definitely feel their presence, and that was one of the things that I thought was most transformative after I made my peace with my father, and was that I could now feel his presence more often. And I felt him being, you know, just being around. And my dad was always pretty soft spoken. He wasn't necessarily one that would give advice, or anything like that. He just didn't talk much at all. I don't know. You know, like I say, I knew him after the Vietnam War, so I don't know how different he was before that.
Right.
But he was, you know, my understanding is he was just one of those quiet kind of guys anyway. My mother, you know, would give advice, you know, sometimes when you didn't ask for it, but most often she just, you know, her advice came through the example that she set. Yeah. So I definitely feel her presence a lot. I feel her presence a lot when I'm doing things with the children and things like that, but I don't necessarily, and every once in a while I may speak to them, but it's not a common occurrence.
Okay.
It's something that may happen, you know, everyone, you know, on their birthday for sure. And at certain times when I'm doing things and I'm thinking about them and thinking about how they would do something. But I use my mother's cornbread recipe. So I think about her every time I'm that, and really those, it's those kinds of things. And we're one of the things which that you and I talked about a couple months ago is that we are finally selling my mother's house.
Exactly.
And
how
so,
does that feel?
Yeah, that was a big deal, and is still a big deal, because we're not done yet, but we, you know, I was definitely, you know, feeling her presence as I'm going through all of her things and trying to figure out what to keep and what to throw away. And this was she wasn't a hoarder because everything's neat, but she was definitely a pack rat. Like she kept everything. And this is, you know, this is back from when people would say, okay, well, you got to keep, what is it? You got to keep 6 years of all of the different, you know, your bills and your
documents,
your taxes, all of these things. My mother had everything from 1979 for anything away. She didn't throw anything away. So we're, you know, it was straight. And at a certain point you could kind of see, it's like, you know, from 1979 to about 1984, 85, when my dad's health started going downhill, you see everything was nice and neat and everything was just all organized. And then around 84, 85, everything is just kind of thrown into boxes and drawers, and it's all still there, but it's all like, the organization system just really starts going out of whack. So we've had a tough time just going through, because there were important documents that just weren't in an obvious place. And we didn't, you know, so as much as she took care of things, you know, in certain regards, there were other conversations that we didn't have. So it was like, okay, all of the important papers are in the lockbox under the bed.
Right.
So that much I knew. Okay. But there's like two lockboxes under the bed. I found another lockbox this last time I was at my mother's house. I'm like, where did this other lockbox come from? So now I find there was a deed, and then there was like another like trust or something that you know, things just keep coming up, and I still keep finding all of these important documents. So I feel I'm like, we can't just go in and just throw everything away. That would be the easy thing to do, but because there's something there. And then I also found I found a picture that my father volunteered for two tours of duty in Korea and then volunteered for two tours of duty in Vietnam.
Wow.
And so I found a picture that he of him as a fresh-faced kid that he sent to his mother. It had to have been his first military photo. I'd never seen this photo before. And I found this the last time that, I was at the house. So it's like all of these things just keep coming up. And
yeah.
And
well, those are treasures too. And you just, you can't just go light a match. You have to be diligent. I mean, I would think you'd have to be thoughtful because you don't know the treasures that are there, like this picture of your father. I mean, that's
right.
Crazy. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and, you know, and another thing is that, you know, this is the house that my grandfather built. This is the house that my mother's father built.
Oh,
and so there's, you know, there's paperwork, from, I haven't found a whole lot of his paperwork and my grandmother's paperwork, but there's been a few things. I found a few items. I found that my father's birth certificate was wrong until he was retiring from the military and that they had to get his birth certificate amended. He was always James William McFarland, but for some reason, his birth certificate, he was the oldest child. His birth certificate said Leroy Jr., Leroy, his father's name. And so, but he said, you know, my mother called me, you know, Billy is what he was called. James William McFarland was what's on all of his school records, you know?
Right.
And
wow.
So, but they're not going to let him get out of the military until he changes, you know, just things right. like that you don't know.
Right.
You don't know these, you know, that's just kind of a little aside that, you know, it's not necessarily an interesting story, but just one of those things that is history about your parents that you don't know until you find the paperwork later and
right.
little things like that, just details.
Well, and you know, you have two children, you have the twins, and you don't mm-hmm. know, one of them may end up they may want to be a historian. Or,
right.
you know, that may be their deal. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, you don't want to get rid of all of this amazing information. And
right.
so, you know, they may want to piece this together and do a story someday or do a thing about your family and your heritage. The fact that your mom and your dad were living in the home that her father built is just mm-hmm. extraordinary. I can't even imagine the energy that is in that home.
Yeah.
So I have to ask you a quick question. This is so mm-hmm. good that I would like to do part one and part two with you. Do you have
okay.
another little bit of time that we can keep going?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, fantastic. So thus ends part one of Jane and Nadir Omowale in the Next Room. Part two coming up next week.
Join Jane again next week for The Next Room on Empower Radio as she examines the beliefs, traditions, and personal evidence of connection with those who have moved on to the next room.